Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast by the Takshashila Institution. We are a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like bringing fresh perspectives to Indian affairs and Indian perspectives to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat. Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. I'm Manoj Kevalramani, and today I have with me Pratik and Utkarsh, and we're going to be talking about censorship. Now, the conversation essentially comes because of what's happened over the last week or so with Donald Trump visiting India and John Oliver, that nuisance of a man, creating an episode on Modi. And I haven't watched the episode, so I must confess. And that's not because I'm not a subscriber of the platform which has created this entire controversy. It's just that I've not had the time. But the issue is that the episode usually goes on a particular platform called Hotstar, which, from what my understanding was, there was usually a week's delay in when they would upload international content. But again, I'm not sure of that.
Just 2 days. So the episode airs Sunday night and it's uploaded Tuesday at 6 a.m. as per their listing on the website.
Okay, so that's the convention that used to happen. But this time, this episode has not gone up on Hotstar, although it's available on YouTube for anybody who wants to go and watch it. And that's created a bit of a controversy about preempting some sort of public outrage and therefore censoring. And there's been some criticism of Hotstar, right? I mean, on Twitter, there is a bunch of people who've been saying that this is, you know, wrong. And the other bunch of people saying that, well, it's a private business. It's its choice what it wants to upload or not. So Pratik, let me start with you. Are we being unnecessarily critical of Hotstar? I mean, it's its choice, right? If it wants to air something or if it doesn't want to air something, it's not made a contract with you that this has to be aired and, you know, whatever, come what may. Right.
Yeah, and it's not as simple as that, right? So let's take a step back. One of the things to understand is all these kind of platforms, right? And even though Hotstar, Netflix are curated content platforms, as Tarleton Gillespie says in Custodians of the Internet, moderation is the essence of what platforms offer, right? In anything that they do, they are moderating what you see, what you watch, the recommendations you get in some form or the other. So the platforms are always going to do that. The debate on moderation is generally between two extremes, as we've sort of seen in this case also, is that either they're accused of censoring free speech, right? Or they're accused of being too lenient with harmful content, say something like child sexual abuse content material or something like that, right? So, and I think what we have to realize is that moderation is always going to be a middle ground. There's always going to be a compromise, right? And I think that's one of the great things of working in tech policy. You always are faced with those compromises that you have to make, right? So when it comes to this Hotstar case specifically, there's another model that Stratechery proposes, which is the closer a company is to the end users, right, the more responsibility they have. Mm-hmm. And by virtue of that, the more discretion they can exercise when it comes to moderating content. So if you look at it from that framework, what Hotstar did is not necessarily wrong. Right, because they are closest to the end user. They can exercise that discretion. And like you said, there's also been past instances where there has been outrage and companies have had to take content down. Right, it happened with Amazon back in I think 2017, 2018. Amazon Canada, right, the Canadian version of Amazon had doormats that had the Indian flag on them.
Yeah.
And then Foreign Affairs Minister, the late Sushma Swaraj, basically threatened them with revoking visas. Right, Amazon complied. Did they necessarily have to? Was there any legal basis for them to comply? Probably not, right? But this extraterritorial imposing of sensitivities does tend to happen. I think China is another example, right? Where Marriott had to basically take down their website and issue apologies because they sent out a mailer which listed Tibet, Hong Kong and Macau as separate countries, right? Audi had to apologize because they quoted Dalai Lama in an Instagram campaign. Right,
an absolutely obscure, meaningless quote—one of those random things that you would get in your WhatsApp forwards in the morning.
Yeah. But why would Audi quote them?
It was an advertisement in some market in which, you know, there was a quote which was something like, you know, about spirituality and goodness and something like that, but attributed to the Dalai Lama. And it was just like one of those things, like, you know, essentially, I think the assumption was that a ride in this car will lead you to a spiritual experience. I think that was I'm sort of interpreting for them, but I think that was the agenda. But it was this absolutely inane thing, and it became a big issue in China.
Incidentally, Instagram, which is banned in China, right? It's strange. But then the NBA was another example, right? CCTV blocked out Houston Rockets games.
Yeah.
I think a lot of them tried, I think Alibaba, etc. I don't remember the exact stores, but I remember there was an instance of Houston Rockets jerseys being taken off platforms, right? It was driven by this whole thing. So in that sense, you can understand why Hotstar chose to do this. And look, and they also knew that this content is uploaded on YouTube anyway, right? So it's not that they were denying people information, because that you could argue that that content was going to be up anyway. You know, the Last Week Tonight YouTube channel have done this for as long as the show has been on the air. So that it's not hidden knowledge that the information is uploaded in any case, right?
On that point, do you think it is moral for us to take a stance saying that a platform should do this and should not do this? Because YouTube has its business in India and Hotstar has its business in India. Hotstar just took a business decision that this is what I want to show. And if people really want me to show that, they will outrage and the market will force me to put up that content, right?
Yeah, and look, morality has never stopped anyone from taking a stand on something, right? But I think what's important to watch out for is the kind of trend that this can lead to, right? As an isolated instance, yes, you can argue that Hotstar was within their right to do so. But this was an obvious instance, right, where you could easily see what happened, like an episode didn't go up. But there are, so, you know, to quote Amit Verma's podcast, this was a seen instance, right? But there could be an unseen instance where you don't know what's being monitored, right? And that's where it becomes tricky, because once you don't know the kind of information that you're not being exposed to, and look, these guys, even though they're in the entertainment business, they still have the ability to shape public discourse, right? So it's those kind of trends that people need to be aware of, and if needed, put moral pressure on the company/companies to act.
But that's sort of, Utkarsh, the one point that you made, which I thought was interesting, was about you know, the market would force them to put it on the network. That's usually not what happens at all, in any which case. The market will not force you to do something in terms of carry something. What usually happens is that you have something, people outrage against it, you either defend it or you pull it off. And that's usually what the model has been.
Again, this is the long run argument.
Yeah, like it's very rare economics for the market to force a company to take a decision to air something, you know. But it's much more likely that, I mean, I can't think of a single instance where somebody has been forced to air something or carry something because the market is forcing you, because then it's a very different call. And also the fact that this company is preempting that this is the kind of outrage, that it also tells you a little bit about their estimation of society and where society is right now. That's kind of challenging, right? Because if companies start to do that and factor that into their business decisions, saying, well, okay, and this is the kind of chilling effect that you've seen in China, where companies will factor that in and they will say, well, okay, you know what? We don't want to talk about something at all. So, you know, something might massively horrible might be happening in Xinjiang. But till, you know, we're getting cheap labor and all that, and we're not really going to talk about it. It in some ways creates this issue of not just corporate culpability in certain crimes and actions going forward. I mean, obviously going way forward with this as opposed to what the current scenario with Hotstar is. But it creates that sense of what is the, like you said, the moral sort of what morally impinges on a company. And it takes me back to a conversation that we had in the office a couple of weeks ago about how do you assess the moral weight of your actions? You know, what is a corporation's primary interest? Is it just to serve its shareholders, or is there a broader public good that you also must be looking at? And it sort of raises some of those questions also, particularly when you sort of preemptively start doing this. And which is what you said, right? That could be the unseen effects. Yeah. You don't get a sense of what is going to happen in the future with any of this stuff.
I think in the long run, the major objective of a corporation is to serve its shareholders and make profits. In the short run, obviously, like you said, people have not put up content because of market pressures. When it comes to fundamental issues like freedom of speech and the right to dissent, we need to build certain kinds of moderation into place and talk about it and probably say that this is not right and this is not what the company should have done.
Yeah, because increasingly it looks like this, right? If you're going to pull off something like this without even letting people have a chance to outrage about it, because if they want to outrage, they'll outrage about it. I mean, I don't see anybody boycotting YouTube. And sorry, YouTube, if they do after this, but I don't see anybody boycotting YouTube. But the idea that you chose to do this tells me, again, like you said, how many other ideas which might be cutting edge, which might be good, which might be entertainment with sort of some sort of sense of consciousness beyond the constant household political dynamics that we get to see, you would probably get far more better content, right? And this tells you that you're catering to a consumer who you feels is hypersensitive. Again, I've not seen the episode, so I don't know what he says about Modi. But it just creates this effect that as a society, there are certain things that can be done, there are certain things that just cannot be done. We won't even think about it.
Yeah. By the way, if you were in office on Monday last week, we had live streamed it.
Oh, I was, but I was working. See, some people work in the office.
How could we live stream it?
Sorry, not live streamed it. We broadcasted it.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so let's sort of step back and look at long-term censorship. What does this tell us about how we can look at censorship going forward in the future? Like you said, moderation is something that platforms will have to do. How does one sort of conceptualize this, particularly when you're going to have these fights with regard to free speech? I mean, because from a free speech position, I would say, you know, yes, I agree Hotstar is within its rights to do whatever. But from a free speech point of view, this is something that is sort of going to develop a chilling effect down the road. More companies are going to look at this model. More companies are going to say this works. Are we sort of heading down a dark path going forward? Is this sort of digital authoritarianism with a business logic to it? Are we going sort of that, in that direction?
I mean, it very well could be, right? But if you look at the alternative that you have to self-regulation, right? One is no regulation, you know, which is romanticized as the marketplace of ideas. But you know someone is going to abuse that. You know there's going to be a mortal panic and the government is going to step in. Another thing that could happen is that the government just steps in and regulate. And we've seen what's happened with POFMA, right? Prevention of Online Falsehood and Manipulation in Singapore, right? It's had an effect where pretty much anyone from the government can raise a complaint about something or can take something to task. And you also saw that, right? The first instance of its use was against an opposition politician, right? So you've essentially, in trying to criminalize false information, you've criminalized all information in a sense, right? Any information that someone finds inconvenient is objectionable. So we're still looking at self-regulation, but it's going to take a while to find that balance where freedom of expression essentially is not inimical to or is not secondary to corporate interest, right?
Yeah.
And it's not going to be an easy easy road, because we've seen, like you said, with China, we've seen that, right? And disclosure, I used to run product for a CDN company and handle China and Russia, right? So I've seen some of this stuff firsthand as well. That could very well be where we are going. And it's interesting because you've seen a lot of events over the last couple of years that have sort of thrown open this debate, right? One that comes to mind was what happened with Cloudflare. Again, disclosure, a former competitor, was that, you know, they had to take down two websites in response to public outrage, right? Daily Stormer and 8chan. Every time they did this, their CEO came out with a blog post saying that, look, we're doing this, but this is not the kind of decision a company like Cloudflare should have the ability to make, right? But nevertheless, did it anyway. But what happened? Those sites were back up within a matter of days because they just found someone else to provide them services, right? So it's going to be a bit of a whack-a-mole before we actually come to a solution.
Yeah.
And I think this is why it's important to keep criticizing or keep an eye on these companies as they're doing these sort of things.
Yeah.
Because you have to push them to do the right things. But at this point, I'm not seeing any alternative to a self-regulation kind of this thing, right? Because your alternatives are worse at this point.
Yeah, alternatives are worse, right. I mean, I sort of, it reminds me, you know, so we're recording this on Monday and yesterday there was massive panic in Delhi. And it was, a lot of it was fueled from social media. I mean, whatever happened on the ground maybe happened, maybe did not, but there was a lot of social media panic. I mean, I remember getting frenzied calls from people in Delhi saying, you know, this is happening, that's happening. And if, as we eventually learn, nothing really significant happened on the ground. So there is a case for some degree of moderation of any of the sort of content, sort of falsehoods and all of that online. And like you said, when the government steps in, it's going to be far more challenging. Firstly, just if you look at it from a point of view of state capacity also.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, essentially what we have seen in India is that because of, for whatever reasons it might be, and I presume one of these reasons would be state capacity, we shut down the internet. We just shut down full access because it's far more difficult to do the, you know, threading the needle sort of thing.
Yeah.
And that's got far sort of more costs attached to it, right? I mean, if you even take out any sort of political nefariousness, the targeting of opposition and all that, just the costs associated with that would be dangerous. So that there should be enough incentive for there to be self-regulation. Yet, I didn't necessarily, I mean, it's very, again, it's too chaotic an environment at that point of time to see how Twitter or companies like these operate. But do we have a sense of how quick the response time of some of these companies have been in certain cases? Or is it that they also lack capacity to be able to contain some of these?
No, and that's an interesting point, because I think apart from state capacity, platform capacity is certainly an issue as well, right? And you've seen this not only with instantaneous things where there's just a few hours for it to respond, you've seen it even with problems that have festered over a period of time, right? Take, for example, the whole thing on political ads, right? You're still at a point where there is a divergence in views. right? You're also at a point where most of these policies today are designed to be very US, UK, Western world specific, right? But these platforms have presence in over 100 countries. Policies are designed that, oh, political content will not be allowed, or will not be, political ads will be fact-checked, things like that. That doesn't very easily translate from geography to geography, right? Yeah. Unless you have people who are knowledgeable about what, you know, how things work in different countries, even then it's a challenge. But without that, it's a huge, huge problem, right? Yeah. Because you can say, you know, you can say something is very political in the American context, not necessarily political in the Indian context. Yeah. Right? Should you ban that?
Also, for an example, you may not have the ruling dispensations page saying something, but you will have support pages and fan pages which are actually spewing venom or saying things which are problematic, to say the least.
Yeah. Right? And it's very hard to police that, right? Even as a platform, it's very hard to police that. Today, the way moderation happens is it's a combination of manual and automated thing, right? The automated system flags something, and then you typically have someone going and verifying it. And there was this very interesting report that Verge had done covering Cognizant and Facebook's moderation operation, right? And you know, I'll apart from the poor working conditions, you know, keeping that aside, even the fact that you had human moderators dealing in a, you know, in an environment where Facebook's policies themselves are changing periodically, right? Now, to expect that person to apply judgment, you know, without any formal training per se, right, of sensitivity training or these kind of things, to apply judgment based on their own internal guidelines that are constantly changing, it's obviously going to be a very, very difficult problem to solve, right? And of course, there are issues aside with a number of them facing things like PTSD, etc., right? It has its own set of challenges.
So when you were talking about that, you know, what came to my mind is this episode of this show Lucifer, where they're tracking down this crime which is being done because of online videos, and they go to this moderation center where all these people are sitting and watching the videos, and obviously the character is Lucifer, the devil, and he basically looks at these people watching these videos and he goes like, oh my god, this is worse than hell. And it should be like that. It just should be worse than hell. Yeah. But yes, you need to have my sort of fear when it comes to this moderation is when sort of you go down a model, again, I go back to China, where, you know, the kind of model that you have in China where, you know, I may post something, it is visible to me, yet it is not visible to everybody else. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of really scary stuff, right? Where you don't even know that you've been censored and you've been censored. And technology sort of, I mean, if the Chinese can do it, it's obviously there, it can be done. It's just about capacity, it's about legislation, and often, you know, when this happens, you don't even know it's happened, so you can't even challenge it.
Yeah, and it brings me back to something that Utkarsh said earlier as well, right? That about corporations in the long run being answerable to their shareholders, right? And yes, the sort of neoliberal in me more or less agrees with that. But there's also the broader point of, hey, what are their obligations to society, right? And I realize I'm coming across a little idealistic when I say this, but until you sort of, you know, find a trade-off there, this problem is not going away, because as things stand today, corporate business models for platforms are fine. They're booming, right? The big tech is running away in the stock markets, right? So until that incentive changes, until that conversation moves just beyond just shareholder returns to larger obligation society, it's going to be tricky. I think some of it is happening, right? You've seen Facebook sort of come up with a Supreme Court of Content Moderation, the oversight board. You still have to see how it turns out, because today, again, they've got one oversight board for the whole world, right? The same problems of platform capacity are going to plague it, but it's still a step in a positive direction. Yeah. Again, like I said, it depends on, the caveat is we'll have to see how it unfolds.
Yeah.
We need to move ahead there.
So my thought on that is that at the end of the day, if society wants corporations to be responsible, society has to push back. And I mean, in many ways, it has to do exactly what the people who outrage when you force a corporation to take down a piece of content or take down a product from your platform because, you know, it's outraging some sort of sensitivities that you might have. It needs to be for people in society, it needs to be, you need to be as sensitive about free speech and those sorts of things as you are about religious sensitivities or ethnic issues or so those sorts of things. If you don't have that sort of an, you need some bit of an extreme to that to sort of force some degree of balance. Otherwise, I don't see corporations responding.
Correct.
You know, unless you sort of do the same thing of, you know, threatening.
No, I agree. As you need to have someone pushing at the extremities so someone else can go and find the middle path, right? And you're shifting the boundary or shifting the goalpost per se, and then you can have, I mean, because the other issue with that is if you just have two people screaming at the extremes, no one's going to meet midway.
Yeah.
But if, again, caveat there, but if the extremes are moving in a desirable direction, again, desirable in quotes because different people will interpret it different ways based on their own alignment. But then there is scope for, you know, other people to come in the middle and try to find some kind of compromise, right? And ultimately, that's ultimately how things will move forward.
Yeah.
I think it's important for us as a society to think about a midway, because the other end of the spectrum is where government is regulating, which is definitely problematic for all of us.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah.
Okay, so let's move from these ideas of, you know, how do we actually go about some degree of moderation, or, I mean, I hate to use the word, but some degree of censorship also might be needed at certain points of time, particularly in case of, say, cases where, say, where you saw the shooting being live streamed in New Zealand and things like that. You need to have a clampdown. You can't let something like that happen. There is a case to be made for some degree of a clampdown, whether you might call it censorship or whatever. Yeah. Without value judgment, it's censorship.
Yeah.
How do we sort of move about doing something?
So when you talk about live streaming in bomb blast or child pornography, these are no-go areas that pretty much everybody in this world believes that we should not broadcast it in the name of free speech, right?
Yeah.
That is done for. The other idea that I want to talk about is a market for certification, not for censorship.
Okay.
Now, this draws from a paper that Takshashila had done about certification of films that go up in the theaters. So right now we have a CBFC, which is colloquially known as the censor board, which issues certain cuts and the producers have to go for it.
Yeah.
What was proposed in the paper was, as you'll have independent certifying agencies, which would be private bodies, so marketplace, which would say that these are the parameters that this movie shows. Another guy will say that these are the parameters that the movie shows. A consumer or a moviegoer can choose whatever rating that the person believes aligns with his or her interest or sensibilities.
Hmm.
So, say 5 of 6 metrics, like this much violence, this much gore, this much sex, this much nudity. One person says, a reviewer says, gives a rating, gives a subjective argument. Another person gives a subjective argument. So if I believe that the second person aligns with my sensibilities more, say a movie reviewer per se, say I believe that this person has a track record of saying things that align with my sensibilities and my ideas of the world, I'll go and watch the movie, and otherwise I'll not.
Yeah, I mean, this reminds me exactly what Rajiv Mastan and Anupama Chopra are doing, right? Yeah, there are two reviewers who are giving us information. There are many others, but these are two that came to my mind. And I then decide if this person likes the movie, then my sort of likes tend to fall in place with this person.
Yeah.
But you're talking about also specific parameters being drawn out.
Yeah.
Beyond just a review of, you know, X's acting was good, the story was bad, and there were plot holes.
So they can be subjective reviews, as well as if the market thinks that it's necessary, you can have certain scales on a scale of 1 to 10. What is the violence level in this movie that this person believes?
Yeah.
Obviously, this is subjective and depends on the perspectives of the reviewer. But if I think this person aligns with me, I'll go for his or her view.
Yeah, this is somewhat of a free market sort of solution, right?
Yeah, but it'll also be interesting to see how something like this may scale to a Netflix kind of thing, right? Because even though Netflix is a curated content platform, it still has thousands of titles, right? So it's going to be tricky.
Correct. That makes absolute sense. Because of the volume of content on Netflix, this makes it much more
difficult. And therefore, sort of something like in cases where there is such massive scale, user ratings are essentially what will drive it, right? I mean, if something that's, you know, there's your top rated shows, poorly rated things, and those sorts of things. You select based on whatever the rating is. I mean, Netflix also, these platforms also have an algorithm which tailor to your taste. So some bit of that is being done by
But they've also stopped showing user ratings.
So I haven't checked if they show user ratings anymore, but at least I know that they give me my preferences based.
Yeah, they stopped because it created the problem where something that was rated below a certain number, people would just not watch it, even though they might have enjoyed it otherwise, or algorithmically it's something that would have been recommended to them.
Okay.
So I think unless if you're using maybe like an Apple TV second generation, I don't think any Netflix app shows you the ratings.
Okay. There's also a possibility of gaming user ratings, right? It can be easily gamed, and you could end up in a position where something which is terrible is usually very highly rated.
So bad, it's so good model.
Yes, of course.
So bad, it's so good is still not gaming, right? Yeah. Because people have said it's good for a reason or whatever, right?
Yeah.
This is where so bad, yet rated good.
So there are challenges that remain with a model like this also, right? I mean, one way is that people can decide based on what the information is available out there. Read before you go and spend your money and watch something or read something.
So IMDb actually does something of this sort. If you see a movie, there'll be a parental guidance advisory which will show metrics and all the things that are there in this on these metrics, violence, sex, nudity, so on and so forth, on the page of the movie on IMDb. So that is one way to do it. Also, when it comes to Netflix, if you talk about a Hollywood movie, there may be a Hollywood reviewer who has given a review. But if a content provider, Netflix in this case, believes that there are enough number of people who will be interested in watching this movie in India, they would have an incentive to ask two or three movie reviewers to give them suggestions and ratings on that movie, right? So obviously, you cannot have reviews, Indian reviews on everything on the platform, but comparatively, the programs which are more likely to be seen by Indians, you can start with them.
Okay, so we have a model in which people, in which there are sort of external raters, rating agencies, if they are individuals or agencies, which are providing you data about what is of what quality, and nothing is being censored. The challenge is then the platform. So in this case, obviously, we spoke about Hotstar or Netflix, so the digital platforms. In sort of the heydays of the 1990s, which is when I grew up, there were those single screen theaters which used to get attacked, because so that was a platform that was being attacked, right? And therefore, to safeguard themselves, these platforms with them. So the challenge then remains is, again, how do you protect yourself against some sort of outrage which could lead to any damage, whether to your business in this case by people not subscribing, or in that case by people actually physically vandalizing your property? How do you then protect that? And at the end of the day, for that, in terms of physical vandalization, you can have law. In terms of this digital sort of thing, which is a part of user choice, you know, I can choose to unsubscribe. How do you protect against something like this? And that's where the sort of regulation also need to look at, right? It's also free choice, right? You know, I may be following somebody, you know, and that person tells me to do it and I do it. But it's my choice.
I mean, someone can choose not to subscribe to Netflix if they're offended by something like Leela, right? It's their choice. I don't know how Netflix can protect against something like that.
They can also choose to subscribe to Netflix and not watch Leela.
Yeah, that would be a good thing for people to do.
Yeah.
Spend your money where you want to, but also if you get offended by something, just
don't watch
it. Yeah, that's the
unless it's not in your face, obviously you can choose not to.
That's the best.
I do think I was sounding idealistic earlier.
All right, so people on that happy note of you still hold the remote, so switch it off. Don't force people to not show things, because let there be variety of content for everybody to enjoy. With that, we'll wrap today's conversation. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle @TakshashilaInst or our website takshashila.org.in.